This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to NSPS Radio Hour for another edition. We're glad to have everybody with us again today. And I'm pleased to have Lisa Isom back with me. Welcome, Lisa. I think Lisa's with me.
I am.
Oh, there you are. I do now. I lost you there for a second somehow. But, yeah, thanks for being back on the show. As I think most of our listeners know, and maybe we have some new ones today, so I'll tell them if they don't know, Lisa and I have been doing a series of shows this year, once per month, to talk about issues related to insurance and insurance and surveyors, perhaps is a good way to phrase what we've been talking about. I know we talked about surveying equipment in our last outing, Lisa, and I continue to get information, particularly from my friend Rick Price down in Florida, about just the continual crime spree that's going on there.
Yeah.
Seems as though it's happening every day. And then just last week, I guess the 17th, whatever day that was, I got a report from New Jersey
from
the Surveying Society there that there had been a break-in actually, it was from Maryland. I got it from the people who manage the Maryland Society and the New Jersey Society are the same. So this was actually not too far from here. It was in Pikesville, Maryland, which is just over kind of between where we are and Baltimore. So I guess the word is getting out amongst the criminal population that surveying equipment is tasty food for selling to people. But I know we were talking about that, and I know you wanted to kind of follow up on that.
Yeah. Well, I know on the last show, it seems like we never have enough time to talk about everything that goes on within the surveying community, but you're absolutely right. And, you know, I did have several emails with regards to the last show about, you know, inquiries about surveying equipment and how to insure it and to your point about the thefts of the equipment. And now, was this a break-in to the office, or was this a break-in with respect to the vehicle? Do you know?
All it says is it was reported, it was actually a Sokia Total Station was reported missing from a Baltimore County Survey truck. And the truck was parked in Reisterstown Road in Pikesville, Maryland. So that's all I really got. So it was in the truck. I don't know if it was at an office or if they were on the job.
Yeah, well, you know, and to your point, you know, last week at the spring conference, you know, there was a lot of conversation, and in fact, I actually when I had flown back to Colorado, I was on the plane with a governor that sat next to me, so we had a chance to chat all the way back to Denver. And you know, one of the comments that was being made was it was about the surveying equipment and how the theft rate has increased over the years, and you know, wondering why you know, the theft rate in the recognition. And you know, one of the things that I would say is, you know, some of the feedback that I had gotten from the last radio show was, you know, how to properly insure the equipment in today's profession versus years ago. And then, you know, again, about the theft. You know, one of the things that I would tell you, and I had commented to one of the NSPS governors about it, that, you know, going back probably 5 years ago or more, the theft rate within the surveying community has substantially increased. And one of the things that I would tell you is, in the past, in years past, most people really didn't know what the surveyor did. And naturally, you know, we are trying to get out about the profession and pique people's interest about getting into the surveying world. But with that comes education of what you really do and the equipment that's associated with it. So in the years past, you know, just looking, you know, because I've been doing this 20-plus years, you know, I would have to say the thefts, when they would occur, we would typically recover the equipment because, you know, it may have been a kid. In some cases in the past, you know, data collectors would be stolen, and then we would find them or recover them on the side of the road or, you know, thrown into a trash can or something to that effect, thinking that it was like a Game Boy. You know, people really didn't know what they were doing when they stole it. But in today's world, it's an entirely different situation. And as you know, over the past 3 years or more, there have been rings. And oftentimes, you know, springtime comes more of the theft reporting. But they know what they're getting this go-around. And people understand that the value of the equipment, how quickly they can resell it. Oftentimes they steal it and take it to other countries. We'll find, you know, equipment being tracked by the serial number, and they could be in you know, all over the country, all over the world, put it that way. In need of getting equipment, and then oftentimes it will come back through the equipment dealer as someone, you know, needs to have a repair part or needs to have something calibrated, and they find out that, you know, that was a listing of a stolen piece of equipment. So they do realize what's going on in today's world and the value that they can get out of that equipment. So I can't, you know, I can't express more that, you know, that everyone needs to be aware of the theft rate out there, and certainly, which leads us back to the equipment coverage. Oftentimes, you know, your coverage again is speared from as an example in an automobile. Oftentimes, it's not covered if the vehicle is unlocked, as an example. So if you're loading up your truck and you got it running and the vehicle is not locked and you're going to and from inside your building, with the theft rate comes some of those exclusions. So just be sensitive of that, that oftentimes if you're going to and from your office to load your truck up and you got it running and you don't have the vehicle locked, if that vehicle is taken off with and all the equipment's inside, or the equipment's stolen and the vehicle's not locked, you could find yourself without coverage of that equipment, because there is a exclusion on some people's policies that relate to a unlocked vehicle. And so if it's unlocked and not secured, they would not cover that damage or that theft when you have equipment stolen.
You know, that brings to light something, Lisa, that I guess I'd probably heard about this before, but I just got an email from somebody this morning about it. And when you said the locked thing, it brought it up, because what the message was about was somebody who had gotten out of their car and locked the car with their little remote thing.
Yeah.
And then as they were walking away, they heard their car unlock. And what they found out was that there were actually people who have equipment now that can pick up the signal when you lock your car and then unlock it and go. And apparently there's been several instances, I don't know how many, but this was a new one to me when I saw the email this morning, where that's actually happened. And so the reason I brought that up was whether or not you had your vehicle locked would be kind of hard to prove. Yep. Assuming what I read today is correct.
Yep. What they will do, and quite frankly, that don't surprise me. I know that, I mean, naturally, if they can steal the code off of your credit card by, you know, driving by your house. Certainly, there's those educated people out there that can get the code off of your car, I'm sure. you know, the fact of the matter is what they look for is a forced entry. So, you know, what they would have to prove is that it was locked and then unlocked by someone else. You know, that's going to be pretty hard to determine, I would think. But, yeah. You know, most of the cases are by forced entry. By the way,
Lisa, we're about at our break, so before we get into that too heavily.
Okay.
The last thing I'll say before the break is I just got an email from the source that sent me the other one and said that was somewhat outdated, and most modern cars don't have that problem. So let's go to break, and we'll be right back.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Okay, we're back with Lisa Isom. We're speaking insurance today, and before we went away, we were talking about the way coverages would have exclusions in them for locked equipment. And I don't know if I've said it so rapidly, I'm not sure if anybody picked up on it, but I just had gotten an email while we were talking from the person who sent me the other one about the key fob thing, and indicating that most newer vehicles don't have that problem. I'm not sure what newer means. Since I drive an 04 model, maybe it doesn't apply to me. I don't know. But nevertheless, maybe it's not as big a problem today as it was in the past. But you were talking about that exclusion before we went off, Lisa.
Yes. You know, that exclusion is found on a couple of carriers that I know of that oftentimes surveyors will find themselves insured with. Most importantly, it's just knowing how your equipment is covered and the importance thereof. How is it covered and when would it be excluded? And so one of those areas is the locked car question that you would want to pose to your agent when you're insuring. And then another issue is, in today's world, the care, custody, and control of our modernized surveying equipment is certainly a question you want to pose to your agent. And what that means is, and that, this is one of the questions that came back to us off of the last radio show, is indicating that, you know, that they had a robotic, and naturally they were away from the robotic, a physical location of the robotic, more than 1,000 feet, and they found themselves uninsured when the robotic was knocked over by wind. And so basically the exclusion came back to the care, custody, and control in a policy form. And what that means is every carrier will have a stipulation in most of our coverage forms within the NSPS program. The care, custody, and control is wherever it is, but there are some carriers that cost-related people will go to because it's lesser coverage, lesser premium, but the care, custody, and control applies, and what that typically means, it's usually around 1,000 feet. but they consider the piece of equipment in your care, custody, and control if you're within 1,000 feet or within sight of that piece of equipment. And as we all know, oftentimes you'll find yourself not within that 1,000 feet coverage, and then if it's stolen or blown over by the wind or et cetera, it would not be covered under the care, custody, and control aspect of a policy.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, if distance was situational. I mean, I can understand if I'm out on some farm somewhere and I've got a unit sitting across the field or whatever, but if I'm downtown D.C. or some other city, 1,000 feet might be way too far away just because
exactly.
of the proximity. And I didn't know if there were varying criteria depending on location, if it was situational for location or not.
No, it's not. It's typically just written within the policy form. You specifically really need to ask the question when you're insured about the care, custody, and control. And, you know, it really does not matter whether you're in the middle of the city or whether you're out on, you know, a section of land somewhere. The policy form is the policy form. So, you know, you could be away from, you know, middle of the city, but at the end of the day, maybe the care, custody, and control on that policy form is a 500 feet apart or within sight. So if there's, you know, there's gray areas, oftentimes we want to believe that the gray areas is going to fall for the benefit of the insured. That's the way insurance kind of works. But in, I guess what I would tell you is this, from an educational perspective, if you have a $100,000 piece of equipment and it's stolen and you're 500 feet away from it, is one thing versus a data collector stolen and you're within 500 feet away from it. My point being is don't give anyone the right to try to deny your claim. So at the end of the day, just be sensitive as to how your policy applies. It should be a simple question to your your agent, and they should be able to tell you point blank where it is and how to find that in your policy form.
So would it be a standard clause that you would have to try to get accepted in each policy, or is it some have it and some don't?
Some have it and some don't. So the bottom line is if there is a an insurance policy that kind of, you know, one day writes it for, let's just say, an electrical contractor, the next day picks you up as a surveyor, they don't really understand what you're doing, I guess is the best way to put it. So they don't understand that when the surveyor's working that piece of equipment's not right in their hands at all times. So that's where you kind of really need to be sensitive of it. You know, without naming names of the carriers, when they write a policy, there is typically a care, custody, and control clause in any policy form, and just being sensitive as to what that specific policy or carrier, how they relate to care, custody, and control, that will basically tell you about your equipment. And then the insuring equipment and replacement cost versus ACV. So in the event that you do have your equipment stolen, you want to have replacement costs on your equipment rather than ACV, and what that means is they would depreciate as soon as it leaves the equipment dealer. They depreciate your equipment. So at the end of the day, we all know the surveyor's livelihood depends on their equipment. And so what you want to be sensitive of is to making sure that you are brought back to whole if you have a damaged piece of equipment and or that equipment is stolen completely. You want to have it replaced to a replacement cost as of that time.
Does that apply to vehicles as well, or can you do that with vehicles?
Oh, you can't do that with vehicles.
Okay.
Vehicles is ACV.
Okay.
Unfortunately. And then the business income, that was one of the questions that came up from the last radio show as well, is to expand upon that. Business income is usually found in the surveyor's equipment business owner's policy as relates to the equipment was the question. And that is a big factor for surveyors to make sure that their business income is covering off-premises in lieu of just on-premises business income loss. So what that means is if you have, let's just say you have a fire at your business location, business income would pick up any loss of income that you've experienced because of that that fire. However, if you need to rent another space, as an example, to get up and running again, that extra expense on on-premises exposure is picked up under that cost as well. However, as we all know, with a surveyor, you may be able to office from your home, but the business income is your equipment burned at the same time. But what they need to do is to make sure that you have business income that applies off-premises as well to cover that business income lost or that renting of equipment in order for you to continue to do your job. And that is one area that I failed to talk about at the last radio show, that for a surveyor, when you're insuring yourselves, make sure your business income includes extra expense and off-premises rental cost should your equipment, you know, get blown over by the wind and you need to go rent a piece of equipment until you can get your equipment either repaired and or replaced in order to continue to do your job. That rental insurance cost and extra expense cost comes from business income off-premises. So that is an area that, you know, that is sometimes not covered by a policy that really don't understand, again, about the surveying equipment and what you're doing.
Would it make sense to believe that if, and a lot of people do work out of their homes, would it make sense to think that your normal homeowner's insurance wouldn't cover that? I assume unless it was listed as part of what's in your house with your with your homeowner's policy. Is that true or not true?
Now, actually, your homeowner's policy is only going to cover your equipment within, I think it's 250 feet of your home. So unless you have a separate policy covering equipment outside of your home, and outside of that 250 feet from your home, it's not covered.
But would a standard homeowner's policy, even though it was a business, still cover it in the house if it doesn't happen?
It oftentimes will cover it if you've listed it.
Okay, you have to, obviously, yeah.
But, yeah, you're going to have to list it as personal property. So you're going to list it as personal property. But what I would tell you is the intent of a homeowner's policy is not to cover that in-home business.
Right.
So it's really, it really behooves anyone to carry a business policy, whether you office out of your home or if you office at a separate location, to not only pick up that liability limit that you need, but also to cover that equipment should it be lost because of the value. It would be no different than, say, furs or jewelry at a homeowner's policy. They have to be listed in order to cover them above typically about $5,000 is the max on a homeowner's policy.
Yeah, and in today's world with, as you were saying earlier, and I know we got a minute or two before the break, but as you were saying earlier, the value of the equipment today being so much greater than it was in the past,
yes.
Just the cost of the equipment itself. And I assume that because of that, the recovery rate, as you said, being lower now because people understand what they're actually stealing,
right.
that obviously has to have an impact on the the premiums as well, I suppose.
It does. It does. You know, it pretty much all goes back to, you know, the claims versus premium paid in. You know, one of the things that I would tell you is, you know, when I first started insuring surveyors, an equipment package, including business liability, was about $350 a year. But at that time, a maximum loss at any day would maybe be $25,000 or so. If their equipment
maybe
was stolen.
We need to take another break here in a second, so let's pick up on that when we come back.
Right.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Okay, and we're back with Lisa Isom today. And hopefully we'll get everything worked out good here.
Okay.
Before we left, Lisa, you were talking about that the recovery rate and the impacts on getting everything returned or getting paid for. And this is the time of the show we always do our Parker Davis Quick Stakes Contest. Quick Stakes Contest at AmericasWebRadio.com. And, of course, you've done this enough. You know I pose a question, you give the answer, and your answer is what people have to send in through an email to Quick Stakes Contest at AmericasWebRadio.com. And there was a phrase we were talking about earlier in terms of impact on insurability of your equipment. And what was that phrase?
It was care, custody, and control.
Okay. That's the phrase we're looking for in our answer. And maybe you want to pick up on that again. I don't know, but that's the answer for our question today.
Yeah. It's basically a clause in your surveying equipment policy form to make sure the distance of care, custody, and control, you are aware of the distance that it's still insured. Or it may be waived altogether. But knowing the care, custody, and control of your policy form will provide you with how your equipment's going to be covered at a time of loss.
Right.
So one of the things that I would kind of end the surveying equipment session about is one of the things that I physically did within our agency, when the surveying equipment started to disappear and theft rates started to go up and so forth, naturally people know more about surveyors in today's world than they did in the past, I believe. So the education and recognition of what they do and how they do it is a positive. But at the same time, what has also occurred is I did my own little in-house research, if you will, of some of the claims that we were having occur, and just kind of food for thought. Years ago, if a surveyor was out doing their work, 90% of the time they would be in a pickup truck, unrecognizable, I guess is the best way to put it. So you didn't have signs and labels on the truck or flashing lights on top, etc. So that was one of the things that, you know, as I would drive by, I would see a truck with a topper on it or something to that effect, and maybe it might catch your attention. But in the recent years with some of the claims, what I did was physically went back to see, was there any correlation between thefts that were occurring and recognizing of the vehicle or the group that was being, you know, where the theft was happening. And one of the things that I would tell you is 8 out of 10 thefts was happening because, and I wouldn't say because of, but basically had vehicles that was recognizable. So what I mean by that is, you know, you would have 10 vehicles that was broken into, equipment stolen, et cetera, and they would have, you know, maybe a flashing light on top of their vehicle or signs recognizing their company. Both is, are good, but at the end of the day, what was coming to our attention was the more that recognizable that their vehicles was, the more chances they were having of having the vehicle, the equipment stolen out of. So the people that really know about surveying and know that that equipment is out there and see a vehicle, I can tell you myself, I'm driving down the road and I see a vehicle, you know, ABC Surveying Company, I immediately start to look around to see where are they. If I see the vehicle parked somewhere, I know that, you know, chances are they have stuff in their vehicle. So that is a little bit of food for thought. So we started to kind of have conversations to and from with the carriers across the country, and we were seeing the same type of data from the claims that was occurring. The more recognition that was brought to the vehicle or brought to that company, the more thefts that were occurring. So, you know, you may take a look at that when you're, you know, redoing your trucks or if you see that theft rates are occurring, what type of vehicles are, where they're parked, how are they being recognized, and, you know, it maybe it's just a freak thing, but it certainly was a pretty high percentage of recognizing between the thefts that were occurring and the way in which the surveying company was being recognized.
Yeah, it'd be sad in a way but I understand the logic behind it from the insurance carrier's perspective. But it would be sad if whether or not you have your name on your truck becomes a factor in your insurability.
That would be bad. It really is, because, you know, from one standpoint, I mean, you know, you have the risk management piece to where you have the flashing light to where people become aware that you're sitting there on the side of the road to avoid someone running into you or causing a bodily injury. Damage, but at the same time, it appears to bring recognition as to, you know, possible thieves breaking into a vehicle as well. So it is a catch-22, because you do want to have the recognition, and you know, I have not seen at this point questions being asked, but it would not surprise me that wouldn't be things that would be forthcoming in the insurance world is, you know, to have those questions being asked both from a equipment perspective as well as from the vehicle side.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that brings up a good question. I don't think we touched on this before. I know we focused a lot on what's been happening in Florida because Rick's been really good about letting us know about that. In the conversations with the insurance companies, do you hear very much about how widespread this might be overall, that we're just not hearing about it?
Yes. You know, honestly, I mean, the thefts are occurring all over the country. Naturally, it is the theft rate, it goes in cycles. And basically springtime, it really, you know, naturally people are out working more. That's one thing. But any type of disaster in another country or et cetera, you'll have the theft rate that goes up. Naturally, Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, California, Florida, those are high impacted states. And I guess it's typically easily stolen and maybe gotten, you know, across country. But at the same time, you do have other states that are being impacted as well. Those are just higher impacted states than other states. But the theft rate as a whole has increased from the surveyor's perspective.
It's good information for everybody to keep in mind, because in today's world, this stuff isn't inexpensive, and worrying about the trauma of having it occur and the delays in getting work, even if you get replacements, probably well worth whatever the premium might be to get coverage. And I assume if in the coverages, the replacements are made fairly quickly.
They are. They're typically made very quickly. One of the things that was brought up at this last spring session, a couple of people made the comments, which, you know, I should, you know, share with everyone. It's naturally with the equipment and the modernized equipment, more and more and more data is capable of being stored from the memory perspective on this equipment. And so, while, you know, with any technology that we have today, we become more and more, you know, reliant upon that data to be stored there. So what is happening is either one is maybe a lightning strike hits a piece of equipment and you've stored your data on there and have not downloaded it anywhere else. Well, your data has now been lost, and so the backup of that is not occurring as frequently as maybe it has in the past. So you know, those types of things can't be replaced when you have a piece of equipment stolen or damaged. So again, it's kind of being sensitive to making sure that data has been backed up somewhere else, in the event that your equipment has been damaged to where you're not out that work and having to redo your works again.
Yeah, that's such an easy thing to do, whether you're sitting at your desk working on your computer or out in the field or in any situation, really. Everybody knows we need to back up. We just aren't very diligent about it most of the time.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that was brought up, that, you know, even though the equipment was replaced and they got it, the replacement cost of the equipment, they had not stored their files, and so as well as they should have, put it that way.
Yeah.
So that's naturally one of the things that, just as a risk management piece, that we need to be more sensitive of. And then you know, naturally, as the equipment is out there and we're out there working, with the springtime comes, you know, the rain and the wind and the lightning strikes and all the normal stuff that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. So to make sure that that is our livelihood out there, and that's, you know, that's basically the basis of our surveying company. So we want to make sure that we're protecting that as best as we can. And one of the things, Kurt, I would say at this point is one item that came up to me several times at the NSPS spring meeting with all of the governors across the country is that we need to make sure that the NSPS endorsed agency is Assurance Risk Managers, or ARM. There is no other agency out there that is the endorsed provider of the coverage of the program than us. One of the items...
I'm sorry. I think we're pretty close to the break here.
I'm trying to
get my time right, but that's a really good topic for us to talk about when we come back, because that's critically important to getting good coverage.
Let's
do the break. We'll be back. You know, I never did hear all of Rick's story. He was telling me that, and you, I think you even mentioned what his situation was, where he thought he was under our program and he really wasn't. But those are the kind of things that crop up from time to time.
Well, and they certainly have been, and you know, I heard it several different times over that meeting. More so, you know, naturally from the East Coast, but. You know, it just, it's amazing at how people feel that they, are with, especially with the same carrier. It's confusing.
Yeah. And that's, we need to cover that because, you know, I hear people from time to time say, well, that program doesn't work very well. And when you first hear that, you think, oh my God, but then you realize they're not even talking to the right people.
Right, right. Well, and sometimes it's even hard to figure that out, because, you know, I know that I come back and have chewed on people here and only to find out that it wasn't really them in the first place.
Right.
Did you have a good Easter?
Yeah.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that Pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com, and thank you.
This is Michael Gannett with the Middle East Research Center Limited, bringing you Insight to Israel, the truth about the greatness of the Jewish state and its struggle for sovereignty and security, every Sunday at 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're back with Lisa Isom today talking insurance again, as we've begun to do on a regular basis. And before we start our last segment, Lisa, I know we wanted to try to get into some flood insurance information today, and maybe we can begin to touch on that and follow up next week. But I do think it's really important to let our audience know about make sure they're working through our program, because it has an impact on premiums, on service, attention to to concerns. And, you know, when we hear things, sometimes people will call up and say, well, I didn't get the kind of service I expected. And then we found out they weren't even dealing with you guys. and so I think it is important for everybody to know exactly who they need to deal with, and maybe even to be sure when you're talking to somebody who's representing themselves as our program, to make sure they're dealing with insurance risk managers, because we want this to be a great benefit to our members. And if something's happening and they perceive that it's not a good benefit, or as a matter of fact, it's even a negative, then that hurts us from the perspective of providing the kind of service and benefits we want our members to have. So I'd like you to touch on that as we go through this next session, so people really know how to ensure, kind of a interesting word to use, I should say assure, that they are, in fact, working through our program.
Right. Well, you know, Kurt, you're right. I mean, the issue is you know, we have had so many changes over the years, and it is sometimes confusing as to, you know, am I insured? And with the carriers, most any agent can represent the same carriers that we're representing. However, it's not the same coverage. It is not the same pricing structure that we at the NSPS program represent. And so, again, you know, effective 2011, Assurance Risk Managers became the only endorsed agency nationwide. And naturally, with that, we're contractually obligated through NSPS as to the type of service that's provided, the knowledge, the capabilities within our agency, as well as the dedicated claims and producing staff. So the agents that we have working on the program, that's all they do. And so when you're dealing with a Lisa Isom, or you're dealing with a Ron Kiter or Scott Sorensen or Brian Anderson, Lois Schreiner, you know, et cetera, you know, all of those producers, that's their livelihood is the land surveyor. That's what they do. That's who they're focused on. And they have an obligation to provide the services. Whereas any other agent out there, you know, in the past, you know, there have been, you know, a couple of other agencies that had worked with us in NSPS, and they no longer represent NSPS since 2011. However, you know, just this past week, you would think after all of these years, even the people within NSPS would know, but in essence, they don't. So when you're representing, let's just say, CNA as an example, you think you're with NSPS because the question is posed, you know, are you a member of NSPS, yes or no? Well, that only represents a pricing structure discount for CNA, but they can represent that to anyone else in the country. So one of the clients that I dealt with over the past week indicated that he had been insured with one of the carriers and had been insured since I think it was like 2008. And he always assumed he was with the NSPS program, wasn't getting the pricing, was not getting the service that he thought in it and had also expected, and only to find out he was not with us. And so, you know, what I would say to any of the listeners is if you have any doubt, just shoot me an email and say, I'm, you know, Joe Blow, and my policy's with XYZ carrier. You don't have to get into specifics about your agent. We don't really care. What we do care about is whether or not you have the coverage that you should have and naturally the pricing you deserve. So just shoot me an email and I'll send you back a note and say, you know, thank you very much, but we have not written your coverage. Then it's left up to you to naturally come back and we can certainly represent you and provide you an optional quote when your renewal comes up as well. So rather than, you know, finding it out later, and one of the things, Kurt, I just explained to you, you know, I make sure that the service is kept up to speed with my producers and by contractual obligation to NSPS as a whole. I can't tell you how many times I've come back and said, you know, so-and-so called in for a certificate and they didn't get their certificate until 3 days later. Well, I know that that's not our standard. Our obligation to NSPS is within 24 hours or same-day service. So needless to say, I've come back to my office and try to track down, you know, who did what to whom, and only to find out it wasn't even one of our insureds. So, you know, with that said, you know, make sure if you think you're within SPS's insurance program, I'd be more than happy to explain to you, yes, you are, or no, you're not, and help you get into the NSPS insurance program where you where we do the coverage is what we do. We know the surveyor. We know what you need, and we're constantly looking out for the best interest for that surveying company and the profession as a whole.
So. Right, and discussing this through this segment, like I said before, our interest as NSPS is the whole idea for doing the program was to provide something valuable to our members, and so we just want to make sure that it is valuable and that they're getting the service that we claim they're going to get by using the people who are part of the program and have the authority to give them the benefits that are part of our program. And so we want to make sure that's what's happening, and people don't end up with a bad result where it could be avoided by making sure that they ask the question.
Sure. Well, shall we move on to maybe flood insurance?
Yeah, we've got maybe 5 minutes or so to chat about, maybe begin a discussion about flood insurance, and then we'll pick up on that topic next time.
Okay. Well, you know, naturally with flood insurance, some of the NSPS members have actually seen some of the flyers that have gone out from our office showing flood insurance and bringing flood insurance to people's attention. What I will do is just to that point is briefly talk about flood insurance. And oftentimes people will say, okay, flood insurance, you know, I rent my building. I don't really need flood insurance. The property owner takes care of that. Or they'll say, I office out of my home. This is more from a risk management educational piece than anything else. But, you know, naturally with springtime comes the rains and the snow melt, and you know, you have situations across the country, California being one of them, where the drought is a tremendous this year. But at the same time, you'd think, okay, drought, we don't need flood insurance. Well, naturally, you can see some of the occurrences from having a drought and then having a sudden rainstorm that causes the mudslides, causes the flood, and/or the rain melt or the snow melt that causes the flood rising in creeks. But at the same time, you know, the flood insurance as a whole needs to be put in place at least 30 days prior to anything occurring. So with flood insurance, unless it's mandated by a mortgage company, it typically has a 30-day waiting period prior to effective date. So it is important that you're being proactive about a situation occurring. And, you know, I can certainly speak on behalf of Colorado last year in the devastation that we experienced from the flooding. It was not necessarily just on a creek bed or a river that experienced the flood situation. Those flash floodings can occur anywhere, anyhow, and there was many people that was left without coverage because of the you know, the flash flooding that we had.
You got a up close and personal experience with one of those, didn't you?
I did. You know, my son and I was driving and. And truthfully, there was, you know, there's a creek bed at you know, 3 or 4 miles away, but we're talking just because of it was pasture land and you know, 5 inches, 6 inches of rain in a matter of a few minutes is going to cause water to run really, really fast. And And basically, we were driving down a street, and you could see a wall of brown coming. And when I realized what it is, it's just rolling water coming down off of a hillside towards the road that we were on. And fortunately, with the lay of the land, it turned right before it came over the highway. But in the midst of this, I mean, within a matter of minutes, you can't go anywhere. You can't run from it fast enough, as they say, but it was literally knocking cows off their feet coming down the side of a hill.
I was just going to say, we got about a minute left. I guess the point of that is getting back to what you said earlier about having insurance in place. You don't really get to pick the time and place of where things are going to happen, do you?
No, you don't. You know, the thing is flood can happen anywhere, low-risk flood zones, you know, in the desert, you know, and naturally 100-year-plus flood zones that's never flooded before or that you haven't had a flood in 100 years, put it that way. But we can certainly take this up at the next radio show, but, you know, what I would leave you with today is don't wait until it starts raining to try to get your flood insurance put in place. You know, be sensitive that all homeowners policies exclude flood and building insurance exclude flood. So it is any type of flood is excluded on those policies.
So we need to look out for that. Well, that's good. Well, thanks for being with me again today. It's been a great show, a lot of good information on the equipment side and also on explaining the program to everybody. And we'll look forward to picking up on the flood insurance when we come back again next month sometime.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for allowing me to talk again. And any questions, be sure and call us at 888-454-9562.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.